It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut 4. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I am joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
Yes, it is me.
It is you.
I am here.
You are here. You know who else is here? Christopher M. Landers.
Is that even...
I thought you were going to give me a really funny nickname on the spot, but...
Monroe.
That was...
Christopher
sadly,
Monroe
Landers.
What is your middle name? Are you feel comfortable saying it?
I'm embarrassed by it. Do I have to say it?
What's it start with?
J.
Okay.
That's it's a family name.
That's fine. You don't have to say it.
It's strange and Austrian. Much like my family.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm going to think about it the entire podcast and try to guess at the end.
If you can, I will be very impressed.
Guys, what's interesting is that we've been talking for most of a minute now. And believe it or not, nothing matters. Nothing. None of this matters. None of it.
I wonder where
the words that I've said don't matter. Any of our previous episodes of the Cut Forecast, if you listen to those, none of them matter. Frankly, any of the episodes moving forward, they don't matter either. All that matters is what occurred over the weekend on May 7th, a day, a red letter day in the history of Major League Baseball, nay, in the history of the world. Bartolo Colon, Mets pitcher. Gemma is so floored
Gemma
by this. She threw her pen across the room.
Lost fine motor skills.
Yeah, I did.
Bartolo Colon hit a home run.
Really, our site just should
I know. We're all out of work today. What happened.
I mean,
this is the dream. This is
all baseball is over now, right? Like, yeah. There's just no...
It's just a victory lap
for
5 months for Bartolo.
Yeah.
Right.
He goes around to every stadium and just runs laps around the bases.
Well, yeah. The first thing I have to ask you guys, where were you when it happened? Chris, what were you doing when you found out that Bartolo Colon hit a home run?
So I was not working that night. I'm normally working Saturday nights, but I wasn't working that one.
Yeah.
And I was out at a bar with a couple friends, and I get a text all of a sudden from a friend of mine who lives in San Diego.
OMG. Were they at the game?
He was at the game on Friday. He missed the Bartolo game.
So never miss a Bartolo start.
I get a text that says nothing but Bartolo with 15 O's in all caps. And so I immediately
That's
pop open...
That's a good friend. That's
I pop open
friend.
The Cut 4 email that I get on my phone. I figure, like, the email chain is going to be blowing up with this.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out what had actually happened. All it was just vague references to Bartolo doing something.
Yeah.
So then I thought to myself... He couldn't have actually, like, what would be the most absurd thing for Bartolo to do? And I, like, did he actually hit a home run?
Yeah.
And I, like, stepped out, got signal, looked on my phone, and realized he had actually hit a home run, and then I just didn't know what to do with that.
I even added you in Slack, Landers, and you did not reply.
That is true. You had me in Slack.
You added him in Slack. Go away. This is the most millennial thing I've ever heard. Gemma, what were you doing when you found out about Bartolo Colon's home run?
I was watching it.
Really?
Yes, I was working, and the Mets game was on PIX 11, and I have
Shout
an
out
antenna.
To PIX 11.
Yes, so I was, like, tuning my antenna. I was like, oh, I can watch the Mets game, so I had the Mets game on.
You have
I was
an
like,
antenna?
Yes.
And so you're 68 years old?
Okay, it's not like rabbit ears.
Look, she adds people in Slack. That's
yes,
like
I also add people in
That's
Slack.
True. So average
working,
out to like 35.
And I'm like writing other blog posts that are totally unimportant now in the face of everything else. And I was watching the game and I like Bartolo comes up. He swings and I'm like, wow, what a long fly. Oh my God. And I just started freaking out. If you go back in the Slack log, it's like just
no one cares about our Slack.
Oh my God, but you can witness my incoherent typing. It's just like 10,000 exclamation points and me being like, Ben, and it happened. And then I wrote two posts about it that night.
That few?
Yeah, I know.
Impressive that you could form English words after your brain had just been exploded.
So I think the Cut Forecast is a place of honesty, so I will tell you what I was doing Saturday night when this happened. I was watching Star Wars The Force Awakens for the fifth time.
I think we all just assumed that at any given point we're watching The Force Awakens.
I was. I had Twitter open on my laptop next to me because I have to have Twitter open at
no
all
one
times.
Cares about our Slack, but everyone needs to know about your
well,
Twitter life.
Everyone has Twitter. No one has Slack but us.
It's so That's common now.
Everyone has Slack, but nobody whatever. I don't care about Slack. What I care about is Twitter.
The truth
is
been
I was on Twitter and people were talking about how Bartolo Colon hit a home run and I was like, ha 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 ha. That's really funny. I'm gonna go back to the adventures of Ray and Finn. And then it kept scrolling through my feed and I was like, this is not a funny joke. And I was like, wait a minute. Wait, did he actually hit a home run? And I, sure enough, I looked at it and there it was, the Bartolo Colon home run. I will never forget sitting in my chair watching The Force Awakens on my laptop, having the video of Bartolo Colon hitting a home run. It was like the greatest moment of my entire life. That was it.
I was legitimately overjoyed for several hours, just like felt ecstatic and happy.
It was amazing.
That is what Bartolo brings to us all, really.
It's amazing because it shows that anything is possible.
Like, exactly.
We've talked about this before on this podcast, that there's some things that on a baseball field that just seem impossible, right? I've said that before, that maybe if I was really lucky I could draw a walk or I'd get hit by a pitch, but I never would think that I could hit a home run. But Bartolo Colon has worked at this so hard for the past 2-3 years, in addition to his entire major league career, and he hit a home run. It makes me think that there is a non-zero chance that if I spent 12 hours a day, every day, for the next 20 years working on it, that I could hit a home run. And that's the magic and the beauty of this moment. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think that is the larger magic of Bartolo, that everyone sees a little bit of themselves in his quest on the baseball field.
Yes. Shout out to you, Bartolo. We all dedicate our lives.
Perpetually shouts to Bartolo.
But ultimately, for our purposes, obviously that was like the most surprising and joyful home run that any of us has ever seen, will ever see. Baseball, at this point, who cares? But we're looking into the past. What other home run did you see that shocked you as much as this Bartolo Colon home run? Gemma, why don't we start with you?
Oh my gosh. I don't think anything in my life will ever be this shocking again. I think that I've just reached the point, you know, like you do. But we're gonna throw all the way back to child Gemma, because when you're really little, it's much easier to be truly stunned by a lot of things. So it was 1998. And me and a couple of my friends went to, obviously with their parents because we were children, to Tiger Stadium for my friend Alora's birthday. She wanted to go to a baseball game.
Okay.
So we went to this baseball game, Tiger Stadium, and we had like pretty decent seats, and it was against the Cubs, and it was 1998. So it was like really exciting. Sammy Sosa was going to be there.
So many dingers.
Kerry Wood was pitching. It was really exciting. Like, we knew, we were sure that, Sammy Sosa is going to hit her home run. Like, obviously, we were all really into that year, you know. We were all really excited about it. So we go, and there's this guy next to us, and the entire game, he's just screaming, Sosa! Sosa! The whole game. And, like, bowing, like, standing up and making the bowing motion. Not even during his at-bats, just, like, the entire
game.
So what happens is the Tigers, who lost, I think, 97 games that year.
Yeah.
And the Cubs were in the LDS. I don't remember how far they went in 98, but they were definitely in the postseason.
Yeah.
So the Cubs were good. It was really exciting. And the Tigers were like, whatever, we're just here to like hang out. So
or Detroit.
So then I don't remember what inning this is, but I did look up the batter because I couldn't remember who it was. But it was Damian Easley.
Okay.
And he came up.
Tiger great, Damian.
Yes, Tiger great. And he hit a home run off Kerry Wood. And it was truly stunning because that was not what we expected to see.
Yeah, he flipped the
script.
On
that day. Yeah.
Did Sosa homer?
Sosa did homer, yeah. But that wasn't as memorable as being like, wait, what just happened? You know?
Those are good.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then the Sosa guy was happy.
Sure. That guy seems like our very like principled fan.
Oh, and the Tigers won. The Tigers won the game.
Good for them.
The most surprising twist of all.
Yes, I know. It was great.
Whoa, harsh.
Great birthday.
Very harsh.
Look, the 98 Tigers.
Yeah,
look, they improved.
Well, what home run surprised you, wise guy?
Fair warning, my shameless Yankee homerism is going to...
Anyway, so. Here's my
favorite. The most surprise I've ever been after a home run was the 2012 ALDS, when Raul Ibanez hit not one, but two home runs to basically single-handedly win game three of that series.
As we all expected, Raul Ibanez, who was...
Right.
67 years old.
Yeah, so several reasons. One is that the Yankees had done nothing offensively for basically that whole series, specifically that game.
Yeah.
They've been totally shut down. A-Rob was struggling so badly he was pinch hit for by Raul Ibanez.
I remember that, yeah.
So he hits the first home run to tie the game in the ninth, and he comes in, it's his second bat, I think it's the bottom of the 11th.
Yeah.
And Raul Ibanez hadn't hit lefties all year. He was basically there to hit home runs against right-handed pitching, which he had done the at-bat prior. But Buck brought in, I think, Brian Mattis, who was a lefty reliever for the Orioles at the time. And it just, you figured that like that was the Raul magic for the game, that he was pretty much done, and like he'd be remembered, and it was all nice, and we loved him for it, but that like the game would be decided elsewhere somehow.
True Yankee?
Look, if they wanted to make a Yankeeography based solely on that game and those two swings, I would watch that.
Plaque? Does he get a plaque?
I might not be enough for full plaque. Okay. I think he gets the Yankeeography and he gets true Yankee status. And that was his Yankee moment trademark.
The second home run.
Yeah. So he's been sufficiently branded as a Yankee. But so he hits a home run off Brian Madison. I remember being in my apartment in college watching it with a couple of my friends, including my girlfriend, who was also a Yankee fan at the time. And I leapt off of my chair so hard that I actually sprained my ankle.
Surprised.
Yeah, as soon as it left the bat, you could tell it was gone. And I involuntarily yelped at a noise that I have never made before or since. And I actually sprained my ankle. I was limping to class for the next week.
Did you tell people the true story? Or did you make up a?
No, I think I had broken it in a valiant game of Ultimate Frisbee.
Oh, yeah, the story. Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something appropriately collegiate.
You said your girlfriend, who was a Yankees fan at the time, did that moment make her be like, nah, Mets?
No, what changed wasn't her fandom. It was we are no longer dating.
Aww. I was gonna ask that question.
Just outing my relationship status on the Cut Forecast.
Yeah, that was fun.
But no, she remains a Yankee fan and we are still friendly.
Good.
So it didn't break her Yankee fandom. My weird yelping.
Unlike your ankle, it did break that.
That's true. Aww. So Raul, if you're listening, medical bill.
Raul is listening.
Damien Easley, I don't know what your life is like now.
Well, so mine are pretty recent, in all honesty. The first one I thought of was the 2010 World Series, Game 6, the David Freese home run in the 11th inning. That was insanity and weird because it's David Freese. And it was who's this guy is really going to be a World Series hero? And
It was the hometown kid, and it was so many things about that story.
Yeah, well, and he just, this week, he went back to St. Louis for the first time.
Yeah, got multiple standing ovations.
Yeah, that guy is a hero there. So I put that first, and then, I thought also about the maybe 2013 American League Championship Series.
You said
wheel my chair over the corner, you two fight this out.
And the Tigers. Now, what I say is that David Ortiz hit a grand slam in game two against the Tigers, ultimately propelling the Red Sox over the Tigers. I don't know if you're familiar, but Gemma is a Tigers fan. I grew up a Red Sox
fan. I've never even heard of that team. I don't know what you're talking about.
But I decided that I can't have that as the most surprising home run I've ever seen.
No emotional investment in that at all.
Because in all honesty, I wasn't surprised. In fact, that might have been the least surprising home run.
Show me a time when he struck out with runners in scoring position and the game
never happened. David Ortiz has never struck out.
I just tore up a bunch of tiny pieces of paper and I was going to throw them at you in anger, but then I realized that would be rude because I don't want to make someone clean them up.
Yeah, that would be rude. So I appreciate you not doing that. But guys, I'm not saying that, all right? The most surprising home run I've ever seen happened really recently until the Bartolo one. And it happens to be the Jose Bautista bat flip home run in the ALDS Game 5 against the Rangers. The reason why that surprised me was it was that thing where everybody looked at each other like, wouldn't it be awesome if he hit a home run right now?
A great capper to this insane roller coaster of an inning.
Hour-long inning. There was tensions were running really high.
The bullpen's I'm so into cleared. This choice because along with the Bartolo, I also remember exactly where I was when that happened. I was listening to the game on the radio, sitting on a park bench, waiting for some date, and I leapt out of the park bench yelling and strangers were around me and I was like, ah, it was crazy.
It was insane.
I remember you and I were both working that game and we were talking about it in Slack once again.
Right.
And we were talking about how truly unbelievable this inning had been. There's no way he could actually go deep.
And then he did.
And then we saw the replay with the bat flip.
I know, which is just all-timer.
That is one of the most singular baseball moments of my life.
Absolutely. Well, and it was just so shocking. And the fact that he flipped the bat the way he flipped it was shocking. The whole thing was shocking. And I never thought I would see another home run that shocked me quite as much. But I have now. Thank you, Bartolo. Let's move on, though, from these surprising home runs. Gemma, you had a poll run on our website this week, MLB.com/cut4. You are tearing up sheets of paper. Please don't do that. You're going to throw them at me.
I'm not going to throw them at you.
The poll, you had a great poll, and it was such a good poll that you're not going to shower me with small pieces of paper. That poll question was, which MLB mascot would be the best at actually playing baseball? We've talked about this a little bit before, but I think it's time for us to finally settle this question. Landers, which mascot do you think, if we actually had to send them out onto the field, would do the most serviceable job?
I considered a lot of options here. One was the Philly Fanatic because, one, he's the Fanatic, and two, he has a seemingly Wile E. Coyote from Acme supply of gadgets and resources that he can use to kind of game and just be an amazing baseball player through like his ATV. But
just he doesn't run the bases, he just gets on the ATV and drives right.
Around them. He can like fire hot dog cannons at fielders who are trying to field his fly balls. I don't know. There would definitely be some shenanigans in a Fanatic game. But I think my answer is going to be Screech, the Nationals mascot.
Okay.
Because he can literally fly. Which,
fair point.
In addition didn't to like changing the strike zone a little bit, would also seem to be an advantage doing everything else.
Now, I will say, he doesn't actually fly.
Well, but
have
isn't...
Have you ever seen Screech fly?
I mean, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
In a world where in which Screech can play baseball.
Okay, I don't know. I'm gonna throw a little wrench in that plan.
I don't know. I think.
If
I think
we assume that he can fly, then yes, I will grant the premise as the impartial arbiter.
Well, but then like every other team with bird mascots would have to let their bird mascots also play to try to.
And then
it
would just be bird baseball, and then where
are you against bird baseball? I'm sorry.
Obviously, the birds want that. You've seen all of the pigeons, just not pigeons, seagulls.
The seagulls,
same thing.
Yeah, they've commandeered
West Coast pigeons.
Emma, which mascot do you think would be the best at playing baseball?
Well, I think that, you know, there are a lot of kind of humanoid mascots in MLB, so that sort of, you'd think that would translate really well, like maybe Bernie Brewer, because
opposable
he also
thumbs.
has opposable thumbs, he has baseball facial hair already, he's got, you know, the great mustache.
He has that large donor base as well of young people. Oh, wrong Bernie. Sorry.
Boo.
I was wondering where the punch was coming there.
Okay. Anyway, terrible.
Moving right on.
But ultimately, I feel like Bernie Brewer is going to be fine, but he's not going to be the best.
Right.
I think that evidence has shown that T.C. Bear would be the actual best baseball player. Because not only has he once, in the All-Star game, he won a home run contest.
Yes.
Can actually hit home runs, proven fact. He also once caught a foul ball in his mouth.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So not only is he going to be making catches with two hands in the field, he's going to be, you know, using every possible way that he can to get an out.
That's a solid point.
He's going to be the best.
I would caution active major leaguers not to attempt to catch foul balls or outs in their mouth.
Definitely don't.
Not recommended.
The thing is with T.C. Bear is that he is a bear and that's kind of scary.
It is a little scary.
Yes.
Mine, I as usual, went through a couple options here. Wally the Green Monster was my first thought just because he kind of looks like David Ortiz. So I felt like that might portend well, but I don't think that actually matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought Mr. Met, not because he would hit well, because he wouldn't want to hit the baseballs, but he would be so concerned with catching the baseballs and making sure they didn't crash down into the earth that he would be great in defense. But I ultimately landed on the Swingin' Friar. Because it's literally in his name that he is able to swing, and he seems like a power hitter.
Well, okay, but then, if the name is so important, what about Dinger?
And Homer.
Greeted by silence.
I didn't think about that. Well, maybe there would be like the all-star team of mascots. Just tons of power.
And Slugger. Slider would be an excellent pitcher.
Yeah,
mascot
or a base runner, like a Billy Hamilton type.
There you go.
That'd be fun.
All right, well, let's move on to our last thing here, because we don't have a ton of time, but this topic deserves our attention. Minor League Baseball right now is in the midst of what they call the food fight, where a large percentage of Minor League Baseball teams put up some specialty food item that they have created, and the fans vote on it. If you go to MILB.com, you can see the food fight there. You can vote for your favorite food items. Let's each pick one item to represent four. You get the floor for a minute. Tell everybody why they should vote for your food item. Chris, why don't you start?
The New Jersey native in me wanted to go with the Lakewood Blue Claws, and their pork roll fried in funnel cake batter.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Which is like so New Jersey, I can't wrap my head around it. But then I figured I could have maybe one of those a year unless I wanted to like endanger my health. Because pork roll, while delicious, is also not great for you. So I think my choice, the Sacramento River Cats, the Giants AAA affiliate, have a bacon cheeseburger with glazed donuts as the buns. And one of my weaknesses is glazed donuts. The other is a burger. So putting the two together.
It's like you designed it.
It really is. If I could create a food Frankenstein to serve at a ballpark, it might be a donut cheeseburger.
I'm hung up on the fact that you somehow think that a donut cheeseburger is healthier than a funnel cake pork roll.
Look, you've already overthought this. Yeah, I'm telling you right
Gemma,
now.
Okay. What's your MILB food item?
There's so many things that I like.
I know.
But I'm going to go with something that actually kind of needs some help in the food fight. Because I think it sounds great. Apparently other people think other things sound better, but I disagree.
We'll be the judge.
Though I think the Richmond Squirrel's Breakfast Bowl is great. I think that the Bloxy Shuckers Shrimp Po' Boy looks good. I am going to advocate for the Greensboro Grasshoppers Sweet and Salty Grilled Cheese.
Yeah.
Because it has many different kinds of cheeses, including brie and mascarpone, weird, with prosciutto, and also strawberry and vanilla preserves, which I think actually sounds kind of good.
I am for any salty and sweet combination, like my donut cheeseburger.
Yeah, I mean, these are cheeses that I think pair really well with sweet fruits, and the prosciutto gives it a little salt. It sounds like kind of like highbrow nice.
Yeah, those are things that you could like combine normally. Yeah. Prosciutto and fruit and brie and fruit, things that go together.
And sometimes you want to eat something that's kind of light but also sweet, because though I do want to eat burgers bigger than my head like all the time, I didn't need a break from all the mac and cheese hot dog parties. Like, I just need a break. And this seems perfect.
Well, so I will support yours simply because it is located in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we're going to stay in that state for my choice. I, as you know, am from Charlotte, North Carolina, the land of barbecue and lots of parks and golf courses and other stuff that people do in Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's on the city like flag, right?
President of the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce, Dakota Gardner.
You know what we have in Charlotte, North Carolina? One of the crown jewels of the city is the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. They play in a beautiful stadium in downtown
Charlotte. Cam threw out the first pitch recently.
Cam Newton threw out the first pitch. Charlotte, North Carolina, the Charlotte Knights, they have a chicken and waffle cone. Get it? It's a chicken and waffles, but instead of chicken and waffles, it's a waffle cone. The waffle cone is stuffed with house-made macaroni and cheese, fried chicken tenders topped with slaw and barbecue sauce. That is North Carolina in a cone, and you can eat it in beautiful uptown Charlotte as you look at the various buildings. Guys,
so we have buildings, we have parks.
Have you ever been to Charlotte?
You're just describing a place
in
America.
When you look at the various buildings?
There are buildings.
You are describing any arbitrary point in America with buildings and parks.
Charlotte is great, and you are all just haters that you aren't from.
I'm criticizing not Charlotte, but your ability to sell and describe Charlotte.
Starting to question.
Birth certificate or bus.
It's hard to capture what makes Charlotte great in a few sentences.
You need to see a birth certificate.
I'm now a Dakota birther at this point.
Sorry,
whatever. All right, we're out of time, but you know what we need to do? Gemma, you and I earlier this week spoke to the Mets minor league affiliate Brooklyn Cyclones director of communications Billy Harner. He came on the Cup Forecast, and you and I talked with him about some of the amazing minor league promotions that his team is up to. Let's take a listen right now. We are joined today by the director of communications for the Brooklyn Cyclones, Billy Harner. They're the single A affiliate of the Mets. You know this team for their amazing promotions, things like Saved by the Bell Night, Sid Finch Bobblehead Night, the 90s were all that night, and of course the most famous one, I think of all, Seinfeld Night, which is coming back this year for a third time, I believe that's right. Billy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, we're beyond thrilled to have you here. This is like the most exciting thing of all time for us. Gemma and I always talk about how this is like the dream, is to plan these promotional
promotional
events. You have our dream job. And so I have a million questions, but I gotta start by just asking about you a little bit. Did you grow up a Mets fan? Was that something that you always wanted to do, was work for the Mets?
Yeah, I grew up in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I was 10 minutes away from where I currently work now. Grew up a Mets fan. My dad and grandfather were huge Brooklyn Dodger fans. So my sister was dating a guy who was a Yankee fan. He came to that door with a Yankee shirt on, and my father wouldn't let him in. So it was in my blood from the get-go. And how I actually got started with the Cyclones, when I was a senior in high school, I wrote a letter saying, I know you guys are starting. I really want to get involved in sports. I'll do anything. And I interviewed and then never heard anything. And then I showed up at opening day, the first game ever in franchise history, with my father and my grandfather, who my grandfather hadn't gone to a baseball game since the Dodgers left. Hmm. So there was finally a team in Brooklyn again, so he could justify coming to a baseball game again. So the three of us are going in to the first Cyclones game ever. And Steve Cohen, who's our vice president, he was the GM at the time, was doing, you know, what GMs do in minor league baseball, handing out pocket schedules and magnet schedules at the front gates. And he looked at me and he was like, "Oh, I completely forgot to call you. Could you start tomorrow?" So I started the next day. So the only game I've actually seen from the stands was the first game ever, which was a lot of fun. And then I just got started in baseball at that point and I was hooked. I've been in the Mets family for, this is going to be my 16th season in baseball. I've been in the Mets family for 14 years. So it's fun. You get to root for the guys, and it's not just a job. It's, you know, something you're passionate about. It's something you root for. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you feel, you said your dad and your grandfather were Dodgers fans. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like an obligation being the Brooklyn baseball team to carry on the like Brooklyn baseball banner into today and into the future?
Yeah, for all of us, I think we always keep that in mind. We try to do something every season where it's kind of a tribute to something the Dodgers did. We've done things with Rachel Robinson and Sharon Robinson. We've had Carl Erskine come. We've had basically the majority of the 55 Dodgers that are still alive mm-hmm. have come to a game at some point. We had Duke Snyder come before he passed away. So we do as many things as we can. We celebrated the 100th anniversary of Ebbets Field a couple of years ago with throwback pricing and, you know, just we wore like retro uniforms that looked like the Dodgers uniforms from back in the day. So we carry it on as a flag for Brooklyn sports. And, you know, we were the first professional team in Brooklyn since the Dodgers left in 1957. And since we've come back, obviously, Brooklyn's had a couple more teams join us. So, you know, we're proud of the success that we've had. And we think that we showed the other sports, the NBA, the NHL, that Brooklyn is capable of having major professional sports again. And not only what we've done for the sports industry in Brooklyn, but for what we've done for redeveloping Coney Island. Mm-hmm. And growing up, when I was a kid, Coney Island was not necessarily a place that you wanted to go to. It was a place my parents went to, and then it went through some tough times. But since we've come back, it's basically been, we're at the heart of the redevelopment of all of Coney Island and made it, they call it the People's Playground. And, you know, the last couple of years have been the biggest crowds they've had in, you know, almost half a century with the number of visitors coming to the beach and coming to the amusements. So, you know, we're proud of the baseball part, but we're also proud of just helping Brooklyn become what it's been. You know, it's been a decade of redevelopment, and Brooklyn GQ called Brooklyn the capital of cool a couple of years ago. And, you know, that's something that we take pride in, not just helping sports-wise, but in, we feel like we've played a part in the transition that Brooklyn has become this new epicenter of technology and just fun and entertainment as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, when you talk to people about baseball in New York, obviously people talk about the Mets, talk about the Yankees, but the pretty much third thing people will always bring up is the Cyclones. And it's like, oh, have you been to a game on Coney Island? It's so cool. It's really exciting to go. And I think part of the reason for that, obviously, are these amazing promotions that you guys put together. And Jem, I know you and I both obsess over these.
We do. I mean, we love them. So I'm just so curious to know. You said you went to opening day and then you started the very next day.
Yeah.
What was that journey like? What did you start doing and how did you get to where you are now coming up with these fantastic promotions?
Basically, everybody in minor league baseball at some point had to sell things. That's whether it's tickets or sponsorship or whatever. So my first year I worked in the ticket office. It was basically like a cave. I was in there. I never went anywhere else. I felt like I was chained to a desk.
Like our job. It's a right. cave here. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So I was there, and then the next year I came back and interned again, and I worked in stadium operations. Mm-hmm. And there was a game where there was a rain delay, and rained like 3 inches of rain in like 25 minutes. So the entire field was flooded, and the dugouts were flooded to the point where like you couldn't stand in them. Like the water was like waist high. And the guy who was my boss told me threw me a snorkel. And I thought he was kidding. He was like, "You got to go unclog that drain." And I went down and pulled out the remnants of a seagull. And I said, "You know what? This is not for me. I'm going to come up with something else to do next year." And I started working in public relations the following year. And I've been doing public relations and marketing and promotions ever since. So it's been a lot of fun. Everybody in minor league baseball does 9 different things. So everybody has different stories of how they got started and what they did. And I have my Seagull story, and that kind of changed everything for me. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is like these ideas, these crazy things, how does this start? So if you have this idea, I want to do Seinfeld night, is that something that somebody pitches to you? Is that something you come up with?
No, we do a lot of off-season planning. I mean, we're lucky we're a short-season team, so we only play 38 games. So we have to come up with something 38 games that we're proud of, and 38 games that make people want to come to see us instead of going to see the Yankees or the Mets or go to a movie or go to Six Flags or whatever. So we sit around. As soon as the season ends, we'll take like a couple-week break, and then we have kind of a meeting of the minds where we talk about things that worked, things that didn't, and then at that point we start planning what are anniversaries that are coming up, what are things that we had success with, and things that we can kind of build off of. So you've talked about a couple of them. We did 90s Night a couple of years ago, the first time with Double Dare and partnered with Nickelodeon, and that was such a huge success for us. So that kind of got us thinking, all right, so that era of stuff is really powerful, and it is hitting our target market of people that we want to come here, whether the new Brooklyn people that are moving here. So what else can we do that's, you know, that era? And in minor league baseball, the cool part of it is you're selling to people that are your age. Like everybody, the majority of people in minor league baseball are in that 22 to 35 crowd. And those are the people that we want to attract to come to games. So it's stuff that we all liked, you know. So we sit around and we're like, hey, remember the episode of Saved by the Bell with Becky the Duck? And then you're like, oh, we should totally do a Saved by the Bell night. And then you start spitballing, and you sit around and you have some beverages and you're playing, you're playing Golden Tee or whatever. And then you start laughing about things and like, oh, it'd be really cool if we could do this. And things just spitball from there. So we come up with probably, you know, 30 things that we want to do. Then we whittle it down to, all right, these are 15 that are definitely feasible. And then from those 15, we say, okay, let's try to build a night. Because we don't like to do anything that's kind of, I don't want to say half-assed, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say that around. So,
it's fine, yeah.
Well, yeah, because all your nights, like the 90s night, you know, you have the Double Dare games, you had concession people wearing Good Burger hats.
Right.
It's like from head to toe.
Right, that's kind of, that's what we've been become known for. So we don't like to do anything that's not going to be the standard that we've set for ourselves.
Yeah.
So we come, that's how Seinfeld night came around. I'm a huge Seinfeld guy, which is, that's the only one that's kind of weird because the 20s-ish crowd doesn't really know it. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like the old guy in the office. I'm 33 years old. So like that was more of a me and some of like our GM and VP had actually seen the show and are fans of the show.
Really? It's like it's first, not pervaded amongst the millennials?
No, it hasn't really made it there.
That's
which is bananas. And even like our players, like when we had the first year, we had fans from 26 states and 6 different countries, and I had more media requests than anything in the world. And our players, they were like, are any of the players familiar with the show? And I had to like give the guys a box set of DVDs for the road trip beforehand. And I was like, hey, you guys are going to Batavia. Why don't you watch this? It's a 10-hour bus ride. So you can come back and have some idea.
You had those puffy shirt jerseys.
Yeah.
Were they like totally confused by that? And like, well, I'm not going to wear this. I'll look like a pirate.
The best part for short season baseball, we have so many guys that this is their first time in the United States.
Okay.
They've come from the Dominican or Venezuela or wherever. Mm-hmm. They've been playing in the academies. So they come to the U.S. and, hey, you've been here for 2 weeks. Throw this puffy shirt on. And they have no idea. But then they see themselves in the paper or they see themselves on TV and they think it's the greatest thing ever. So the first year we did our Seinfeld night, I'd say 95% of the players had no idea why they were wearing the shirts. But they did it and they looked like fools and they smiled like champs. So it turned out to be a lot of fun.
It's good that they were good sports about it.
Yeah,
for sure.
What do you think makes, like, what's, like, the keys to making a good one of these nights? Like, what's the ultimate thing that you have to make it click?
For us, I know there's, like, different schools of thought, I think, on stuff. I know there's other minor league teams. I know Myrtle Beach and Frisco do a really good job of kind of capitalizing on things that happen and turning them into nights. Like, Myrtle Beach last year did something with Deflategate.
Yeah.
And they, but you do that in the way we look at it. You do that in January when we're playing in July. Mm-hmm. Is it still relevant? Do people still care? Frisco this year did something with Steve Harvey messing up the Miss Universe winner. So they did second place night or something like that, which gets you a lot of publicity when you announce it. But when it comes to the actual night, our thought is it still relevant? Does it still work? So we look for things that are kind of timeless, for lack of a better word. So we want to do something where there's a giveaway that we could do, because that is always going to entice people. If there's an appearance of someone from the show or something like that, that makes sense. And then for me, the big thing is the in-between innings, because you can't just call it Full House Night and then just play Dizzy Bat between innings. You have to do the broken arm eating cereal contest. You have to do the How Rude Pout Cam. You know, you have to do stuff like that really, because people are coming to this night, and maybe the only time they're coming to a game, maybe the first time they're coming to a game, and we want to show them that everything we do is fun. Last year, our team was terrible, and we still had a good crowd and still had people interested. My favorite thing, the first Seinfeld night, we lost by 16 runs. I think it was like either 17-1 or 17-3 or something like that. But we had 7,000 people in the seats waiting for the end of the game because they wanted to see the Elaine Dancing Championship.
Right.
And they wanted to have the Jerry runs first around the bases and stuff like that. So, you know, that was kind of the quintessential minor league baseball moment where we got killed. It was terrible. We 9 errors, struck out 25 times. It was awful. But nobody cared because everything else was so much fun for the night. And that's kind of the standard that we've set for ourselves. And we use that Seinfeld night that's been so successful for us. We use that as kind of the flagship for this is the standard that we set. This is what we want our big nights to be. Mm-hmm. And that's what we look at. And it can't just be about a giveaway, and you can't just give out a bobblehead and expect that people are going to get excited about it. You have to make a whole night from soup to nuts exactly what people are going to want and expect, and make it a fun night so that they come back.
Yeah.
And that they, you know, you said the first thing people say is, oh, I've been to a Cyclones game. It's so much fun. We need that. Yeah. I mean, we're in New York City. We're still a minor league baseball team, so our advertising dollars, you know, aren't going to get us as far as other places.
Yeah.
You know, when we have a great game, it's not on the cover of the newspaper the next day, like in a lot of other minor league cities. So we rely a lot on word of mouth and just our goofiness to get us kind of the recognition that we strive for.
I do feel like that's kind of one of the better, like that's one of the good things about minor league baseball almost, is that it's sort of insulated from the result. A lot of times people will go see a game, the team will lose, they'll be like, oh, that was terrible. But like, if you go and have a good time, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Like, you're watching baseball and you're having all this other stuff, and that's kind of the perfect night, really, is baseball and fun stuff on the side.
So what's going to be our perfect night this season for the Cyclones, other than Seinfeld night, which we already know is going to be a bonanza?
Seinfeld night's going to be great. I think our Full House night is going to be a lot of fun. We're doing an Uncle Jesse John Stamos bobblehead. We have the jerseys that the team's going to wear on field, which has kind of become the new giveaway item, I guess, you know, it looks goofy, but we've raised probably six figures with our jersey auctions over the last few years. So it helps out charities. The guys look ridiculous. It gets us some attention, but it's all for a good cause. So I think our Full House night is going to be great. We have a couple other things that are in the works that we're hoping that are going to be pretty great. You know, kind of one of the new things that has become popular the last couple of years is kind of a name change. So this year's the 100th anniversary of Nathan's. It's the 100th anniversary of the hot dog eating contest.
Is there going to be a hot dog night?
So we're going to be, one of our names that we were actually considering initially was the Coney Island Hot Dogs before we became the Brooklyn Cyclones. So we're going to be the Coney Island Hot Dogs for a night going up into, against our July 3rd game. So the next day is the hot dog eating contest. Yeah. So we're working with Nathan's to do throwback pricing on hot dogs. We're working with Nathan's to have guys from the hot dog eating contest there that night. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's, you know, we're doing hot dog research, which I was mind blown away that there is something called the hot dog convention or the hot dog something like that. With
they give you recommendations on how you're supposed to eat hot dogs.
Yeah, there's all that stuff. You find you can't put ketchup on anything. No. People get mad at you. But then even like historically, like FDR fed hot dogs to the King of England. Like he got hot dogs from Nathan's and fed them to the King of England. And it was towards the end of trying to end World War One, and people credit this Nathan's hot dog as one of the reasons why it happened. So
I think it was probably the reason.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I would put down my armament just to eat some hot dogs for sure.
Exactly. So hot dogs, baseball, summer, Coney Island. I mean, it was a logical fit.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be something different.
And, are you doing the custom hat?
And, yeah. We're going to have
hot dog jerseys.
We're going to have hot dog jerseys. Oh, we're going to have hot dog hats. We're going to, it's the whole thing. We're going to use, we have every game we have our Nathan's hot dog contest, mm-hmm. Where they race. So those are going to be our full out mascots for the night.
Nice.
So we'll have ketchup, mustard, and relish instead of Sandy and Pee-wee. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be different, but it's Coney Island. Coney Island and hot dogs go hand in hand is just about anything. So
yeah.
It's going to be a fun night. Our uniforms are, we didn't go crazy with them. You know, it's kind of, we tried to make it look like this. If our name was actually the Coney Island Hot Dogs, this is what we would look like.
Yeah.
It's very Coney Island. It has the steeplechase, creepy smiley face guy on the arm.
Yeah.
We have the hot dog logo on the hat and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. It's going to be a good time.
I will certainly
that's so
be
great.
There.
I want to go. That's amazing. That sounds so good. Okay, I have another question for you about promotion nights. As you said that you start at the beginning with like 30 ideas and you narrow it down. What are some of the half-baked ideas that don't quite make it all the way?
Well, there's some of my favorite ones are ones that we like really thought we were going to do and then we couldn't get approval for. They're kind of old and dated at this point, but when Linsanity was going on with Jeremy Lin, we were going to change our name to the Brooklyn Cyclones.
Oh, that's amazing.
So
that's really good.
Then he started trademarking everything, so that's you had trouble with that. And when Tim Tebow got traded to the Jets, we were going to do a Sandy the Sebo bobblehead. That was going to be him Tebowing. And it was, you know, like stuff like that that you think is a great idea, and then, you know, it doesn't get approval or whatever. And there's some ideas. There was one this year that it was on our list of finalists, but we didn't pull the trigger on it, and we're kind of saving it for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. When it gets down to it, you're like, you don't want every night. You can't do 38 nights that are theme nights of 1990s TV shows. But it gets down to it, and there's some that like I was really pulling. We wanted to do an Oregon Trail night.
I'm so in.
I think that's going to be 2017. That's going to be our big.
Look at that. We're breaking news here on the Cup Forecast.
So that's going to be, I think, our big one for 2017. But there were some other things that were easier to get giveaways and approvals and whatever. So we said, all right, we'll kind of table this one for next year. But circle the date. We're going to do 2017 is the year we'll do it. Because it was actually some guy, a teacher, created this game 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like 40 years ago this year. So there was actually a tie-in to it. And it's become, you know, what it's become pop culturally for the last 40 years. So,
is there an idea that another team pulled off that you're really jealous that you guys didn't think of it, or maybe you did and didn't go with it?
I know the last year Fresno did the tacos.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to do food truck stuff for forever because there's so many just outrageous food trucks in New York that you can get. I mean, even walking up here downstairs, there's 9,000 different foods and smells. So I've wanted to do something with food trucks for forever, but the logistics of it for us, it's, you know, onto the business side of things. We have a partnership with our concessionaire, so it's a different, it's not like we run our own concession, so there's a lot more hoops to jump through. That was really cool. I liked when they did that last year because what we tried to do. They completely sold out to the night. Everything about it was tacos, their jerseys, their hats. They were not the Grizzlies, they were the tacos.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just it was great. I really respected kind of what they did there. So that's probably been my favorite one the last couple of years that I've seen where I was like, oh man, I wish we could do.
Yeah.
I want it to be the Brooklyn Parmesans, I want to be the Brooklyn slices, you know, something like that where
oh that'd
like
be good with do. The pizza on
right.
the hat.
I was like, there's so many things we could do, but it's just the logistics of it are tough. So that's where the discussion started and how we ended up with we sell hot dogs, so it's easy to get hot dogs in the ballpark. So that's how we ended up with the hot dogs.
And everyone loves hot dogs.
Right, for sure.
Arguably a better food than tacos, I would say that.
Oh,
I mean, more New York.
Yeah,
more New York.
Certainly more New York. I will say they're better. I'll
dish out that hot take. So last thing here, Gemma and I pretty much always think that we could run a minor league franchise. We've decided that this is true. And so I have to, while we have you here, tell you our idea, and I want you to poke holes in it and tell us why this idea is terrible.
I'll probably just take it.
You are more than welcome to take it.
I like that Dakota's telling you this our idea, because it's definitely his. And
it may or may not
terrible.
Be my idea that Gemma hates.
Okay, I'm ready.
It's called Tax Day.
Okay.
And it's your short season team, so I don't know that this would
doesn't work,
work
for us.
But it would happen on Tax Day. There's a pregame performance of Taxman by a Beatles cover band. There's free admission if you give the ticket agent a shirt off your back. The players play in suit-inspired jerseys. The stadium race, this is my favorite part, is IRS agents chasing Al Capone around the stadium. Tell me why this idea would not work in a minor league stadium.
Well, I think it's a great idea.
Sure.
Start there.
So kind.
My concern with that
yes.
is that you'd have to do it someplace warm.
Okay.
That's big, because in April, anywhere in East Coast, Eastern League, anywhere like that, you're not really going to get a lot of people that come to the
okay.
game. So
okay.
you don't want to waste a great idea like this one.
For sure. Okay. No, this is good. This is good feedback.
You don't want to waste a great idea like this one on a Tuesday
yeah.
in April.
Okay.
When you're not really going to get a ton of people. You know, you got the elements of the in-between innings. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
You got the free tickets for people, which everyone loves.
People love free admission.
If you could somehow include a free T-shirt, that's the other thing everybody loves.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
people would climb over their own grandmother for a free T-shirt. That is a staple of minor league baseball.
Yeah, especially if it has like the IRS logo.
Right. Oh, for sure.
People love the IRS.
For sure. For yeah. sure. You could do stuff on the concourse where you could get tax advice. You
oh,
could
okay. Yeah.
The H&R Block K counter or something like that. There's all sorts of stuff
this
you can
is,
do.
This is the benefit
yeah.
of having a real pro here
yeah,
rather
this is
than
like
us
such
amateurs.
Skill. Yeah, because our team, we made up a team. Our minor league team is called the Peoria Pancakes.
Okay.
And we were going to have a breakfast-themed night where the hats would be like a stack of pancakes with butter
yes.
on top.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was our other main idea.
This is like I said, you have our dream job.
Yes.
And so we are just now going to pitch a million ideas to you all the time.
When I was in college, one of my last papers that I wrote was about this fictitious team that I was going to create, and it was the Long Island Iced Teas.
Oh.
Our mascot was the Kool-Aid guy, but he was the
right.
an iced tea, and I thought we're going to sell so much merchandise, we're going to do all this stuff, it's going to be great. Let's Get Lit was going to be our slogan. it was great. For several reasons, it probably would not be successful, but
I think it would be a very successful
class. Talk about your fantasy life.
It was like a business course where it was you were given whatever business you wanted to start. What would you do? And that was it. So that was my end of year project where all year I'd built a marketing strategy and a sponsorship and advertising and all this stuff. So, and it got down to Long Island Iced Teas. I think I got an A on it.
That's
which
a
was,
really good.
Was
as well you should.
That
it well deserves
an A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Billy Harner, Director of Communications for the Brooklyn Cyclones, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me. Loved it.
Thank you. That's amazing, isn't it?
It's so exciting. Oh, my God. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm so pumped.
I can't wait. Oregon Trail Day?
Oregon Trail. Hot dog.
Hot dog.
Everything.
Night.
Coney Island hot dogs.
Amazing.
It's going to be so good.
It's going to be so good. Everybody go, if you are within 500 miles of the Brooklyn Cyclones, go
like a reasonable
to every single game that they have.
It is a gorgeous park. It's a gorgeous park.
Beautiful stadium.
Right on the beach.
Coney Island. You'll love it. Thanks, Billy, for joining us. It is now time to sum up the podcast into 140 characters. Chris, we're going to make Gemma go first.
Oh, Gemma. That was such a bait and switch. I don't even remember anything that we talked about. It's all been completely lost to me. Okay. Let's say the best minor league food is just the Coney Island hot dogs. # Brooklyn Cyclones. Go Brooklyn Cyclones.
Love it. I love it. Chris, what do you got?
Let's see. Raul Ibanez, true Yankee, goes best with a donut cheeseburger. # Bartolo 2016.
I love
this
it.
This sounds like the world's best campaign ad.
I love
Look,
it.
Would you vote against Bartolo, really?
Of course not.
Bartolo and Raul Ibanez, same ticket, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, mine. Newest acquisition by the Charlotte Knights, Jose Bautista, the Swingin' Friar, and a sweet chicken and waffle cone. Thumbs up emoji. # Charlotte is the best.
I'm going to reply to that tweet.
Yeah.
And it's going to say, show us the birth certificate. Yeah. Are you even from Charlotte?
I am.
Hashtag,
where's
the certificate, Dakota?
Hashtag, trending on hashtag Twitter. Various buildings.
If you have a tweet that more accurately summarizes
hashtag
this podcast into 140 characters, please tweet it at us at Cut4 with the hashtag Cut4Cast. If you have a better way of describing Charlotte, I don't know that you do, please tweet it at us at Cut4 with hashtag Cut4Cast. You can also tweet at me at Dakota Gardner. I would love to share Charlotte stories with you because I am from Charlotte, North Carolina.
A likely story.
You can go to MLB.com/Cut4, read all of the articles that we write and produce there. Very exciting. If you like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/Cut4 will appear in your newsfeed every morning or throughout the day at all hours, whenever Mark Zuckerberg manually
Dakota's
decides.
Dakota's not really from Charlotte and doesn't know how Facebook works.
I swear that
now
I do.
Who's the old person? Dakota?
He's an alien.
If you're on iTunes and you've subscribed to this podcast, you can go to our podcast page there, write a review, leave us a rating. If you actually take time to write the review, we will read it on the Cut4Cast. That is a promise. While you're there, you can subscribe. You probably have already subscribed, let's be real. And if you haven't, What took you so long, man? Just click the little button, subscribe. It's not a huge deal, man. It's free. It's free. We're a free podcast. Chris, thank you for being here this week.
Pleasure as always.
Gemma, thank you for not throwing all of your small scraps of paper at me.
You're welcome. So far.
I know you tried. But mostly thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.